questions you always had, the answers you were never given, the place to seek the truth. Welcome to Veritas.
Tonight, I take you to my beautiful but mysterious island of Puerto Rico. UFOs, USOs, aliens, secret military bases, and much more. This interview is very special to me. Let me give you some background. I began my career in the corporate world in the mid-1980s. One day, my colleagues heard me talk about UFOs in the lunchroom, and they all said, "Oh, too bad you weren't here a few years ago when there was a gentleman who worked here, and his research on UFOs and paranormal was very respected in Puerto Rico and still is." Greetings, I'm your host, Mel Fabregas at Veritas Radio. If you want to listen to tonight's full interview and all of our material, click on the subscribe button at veritasradio.com. And if you want to get in touch with me, want to be a guest on this radio program, have a guest suggestion, or have feedback, just click on the contact button of our website at veritasradio.com. I always love to hear from you. Well, it's taken me over 3 decades to finally connect with this gentleman who happens to be tonight's special guest. His name is Jorge Martin, or Jorge Martin, who has been a journalist for 45 years, specializing in UFO and alien phenomena in Puerto Rico and the Caribbean islands. He's currently the editor of Enigmas del Milenio magazine in Puerto Rico. And we have a more comprehensive bio on our website. His websites, Facebook, Blogspot, can be also found on our website. Jorge Martin joins us directly from my hometown of San Juan, Puerto Rico. Hello, Jorge, and welcome to Veritas. How are you?
Hi, man. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you for finally agreeing to this. And for the record, folks, we've been planning this interview for over a year, but every time we were supposed to conduct the interview, something happened. 2 hurricanes and some other issues, but I'm glad you're finally here. Well, for the listeners, a lot of people know you in the field, but for those who may not know you, Jorge, let's begin with a bit of your story. When and why did you begin your research into UFOs and paranormal phenomena?
Well, Mel, ever since I was a small kid, I've been always interested in these type of matters, you know, the UFOs, the possibility of life in other planets, strange phenomena. It always caught my attention. But back in year 1969, during the Apollo mission to the moon, I was watching on TV the live broadcast from the command capsule, and the astronauts were talking about things that they were happening at the moment during the flight to the moon. And I remember one of them said, I don't remember which one it was, but I remember one of them said, NASA, we are being followed by a strange, shiny oval object in our course, you know. And then NASA cut off the transmission. You could see the astronaut doing things and talking, but you couldn't hear. Apparently, they transferred the signal to another frequency, so the public wouldn't hear what they were talking about, you know. But I was clear that I heard that, you know. And I said, hey, come on, then something's happening. There's something true about these so-called UFOs, and something is going on. They don't want us to know. And, you know, I became more aware of the situation and more interested in the matter. I began reading more, studying more about the issue. And then in 1973, I was part of a group here in Puerto Rico, the Puerto Rico Center of UFO Studies, CEOPNI, and we investigated a case that happened, an encounter case with aliens and a craft in the town of Mayagüez. And ever since I've been, you know, involved with this type of investigations, you know, journalism. And as you know, Puerto Rico is a hotspot for this type of things.
Well, I remember growing up in the 70s, and this is when the whole UFO wave happened, at least during my early lifetime. You remember that probably. And, you know, everybody talking about the Bermuda Triangle. I used to watch every movie, every article about the Bermuda Triangle, because Puerto Rico is one of the corners of the Bermuda Triangle. Did you follow that story also during the 70s?
Which one? Bermuda Triangle?
Yes.
Yes, yes. I have several people who have witnessed things in out in the so-called Bermuda Triangle, you know, around the Puerto Rico to the north and to the north western part of the island that connects to the so-called Bermuda Triangle. And pilots, people in boats that have experienced weird things while flying in that area. Yes, and now at this moment, many things are happening in Puerto Rico that seem to be somehow related to the type of phenomena that occur in the so-called Bermuda Triangle.
Somebody, I read an article the other day, and the headline reads, Bermuda Triangle Mystery Solved, Scientists Claim. Have you seen that?
Yes, I have seen that, but no, no way, you know, because they give, you know, explanations that really don't explain anything about what's really going on there, okay? And it seems to be some type of magnetic aberration and gravitational distortion in the area that opens, creates openings, you know, to other realms of space or whatever, to other dimensions or things that are happening. Right now in Puerto Rico, such a phenomenon is happening more frequently, and not only in that area pertaining to the so-called Bermuda Triangle, also over Puerto Rico, okay, around Puerto Rico. Openings in the sky seems to be like wormholes. I know this sounds maybe far-fetched or fantastic to some people, but it's happening, you know. There are pictures at this moment of this type of phenomena, and these rips or holes open in the sky, and UFOs come out flying from those openings or go into the opening, and then everything closes again and disappears. It's happening more and more frequently here in the island.
Why do you think Puerto Rico? Because when you compare other islands, you hardly hear stories of UFOs or paranormal phenomena in the islands surrounding Puerto Rico. But Puerto Rico is full of stories ever since I can remember.
Well, I wouldn't say that it's only Puerto Rico, because until the beginning of the 1990s, we received here in Puerto Rico a lot of reports from things that were happening also in the Dominican Republic, in Santo Domingo. It was very common to hear stories, to receive reports from the media from Santo Domingo that were very similar to the things that were happening in Puerto Rico. But something happened back in 1989, 1990, that the newspapers of Santo Domingo stopped reporting on that type of phenomena, and it hardly came to Puerto Rico, the type of information pertaining to those things that were happening. In Puerto Rico, that happened in year 2000. Something happened, I think I know what it is, but we'll discuss that later, that the media here also began discussing every time less and less this type of things that were happening in Puerto Rico pertaining to the UFO phenomena and other type of things, you know. In Cuba, there's also activity, but as you know, not many things come out from Cuba pertaining to the reports about this sort of phenomena. But now we are aware that there have been a lot of activity also in Cuba and different parts of the island. Jamaica is something different. I hardly hear anything from Jamaica. But in the Virgin Islands, okay, the lesser Antilles, there's activity also, as in Puerto Rico. But it's hardly known. It's hardly ever heard about.
Do you think there's a correlation between the fact that the Bermuda Triangle, one of the corners, is in that area and the actual triangle? Somebody told me years ago, and of course this sounds like science fiction, but they speculate that perhaps Atlantis was located around that area, and perhaps they had technology that may still be active in way of crystals or magnetism, and this could be causing the aberrations, as you mentioned, of the ships and the aircraft that pass along. But we don't hear that anymore. It used to be in the 50s, 60s, a lot of disappearances, but we don't hear that anymore. Why do you think?
Until the 90s. Apparently there's a blanket of silence over the whole thing, okay? There's something to the Atlantis or whatever was down there theory, okay? As you know, some pyramids and structures have been found down there very far down the surface, you know, at 1,000 feet deep. What seemed also like structures of a city next to Cuba and Mexico, in the Bahamas section, also between the Bahamas and Miami, structures have been found too, but everything has been shut up. You know, no one talks about it. Puerto Rico, for some reason, is very special in this sense, okay, because many of these phenomena happen, as happened also in the other islands in the Caribbean, but for what I know, not as much as in Puerto Rico. Okay, in Puerto Rico, there's a lot of UFO activity, alien activity, this type of portals or wormholes or whatever, both in the air and in the ground, all over the island. And that there might be a reason for that. You mentioned this, the possibility that some energy or whatever of structures that were built thousands of years ago by Atlanteans or whoever it was. I can tell you this. Back in year 2012, I was checking the surroundings of Puerto Rico, the coastal areas, because there's so much activity of UFOs going into the sea or coming out from the sea all around the island that I wanted to check out if there was a possibility that there was something down there. And I began checking more and more the pictures from Google Earth program and the images of the bathymetry of the NOAA agency, okay? And I was surprised to see that down in the south side of Puerto Rico, very deep undersea, at about 4,000 feet or some more bigger depth, there were two structures. One of them was almost the length of Puerto Rico itself. It is huge. It is a rectangular shape structure down there, picture, linear, rectangular, with what seemed to have an opening at the left side. And from that opening, two lines of whatever may be some roads or tunnels or whatever go up to the island of Puerto Rico, to the base of the island, and of the mountain over which Puerto Rico is, okay, and seem to enter the south side of Puerto Rico, that mountain over which Puerto Rico stands, okay, our island. And the other structure is below that. It is a square-shaped formation, totally geometrical, okay, in shape, a form of five different rectangular-shaped structures, and they form a square there, a perfect square. There's no way that structure is a natural formation. It's much too geometrical, and you know the length of these structures and the width of these structures is the same in all of them, and they form this perfect square. And that seems to be some type of structure that was down there or is down there that was built by someone. You know, I don't think the U.S. Navy had the capability or has the capability to build that type of huge structure down there at 4,000 feet depth or more.
And even if they did, Jorge, even if they did, I was doing my research on you and I found that image you're telling me. I saw the line. It's a perfect line, and it's, if I had to compare the island to that line, it should be at least 100 miles long, right?
Well, it is not all the length of the island, but a large part of the island, I would say maybe half of the island or a little more than half of the island, okay? Maybe 50 miles, 60 miles in length, and that's huge. That's really huge, okay? So I don't know if the U.S. Navy had the capability to do that, okay, as some people might say. But it is down there, and someone built it, because, as you can see, it is not natural. It's not a natural formation. It can be. So either it is a structure that was built maybe by, who knows, aliens, these craft that are going into the sea or coming out from the sea all the time around Puerto Rico, or it was some type of structure that was built there many, many thousands of years ago when the sea level was lower.
Exactly. And, because it used to be, the sea used to be about 400 feet lower.
Mm-hmm. Or maybe that's from a period that's even more ancient than that, you know, and the sea level was even lower than that. But that's not the only thing. I kept checking all around the island, and I also found, checking the NOAA site, the bathymetry images, okay? I checked the northwestern part of the island, the town of Aguadilla, the coastal site. Do you know where this UFO was seen flying over the island in Aguadilla about 4 or 5 years ago that I made public to?
Absolutely. And I also want you to mention that you are the one who made that public.
Well, that's another area here in the island where there's a lot of UFO activity and alien activity. So I wanted to check that area too. And I went into the NOAA site and began checking the images. I noticed something that wasn't very clear. But when I used the filters, the Photoshop filters, you know, to get different effects on the images, creating the effect of negative, you know, going to the negative colors, the negative tones, or finding edges, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, I found out that there's another huge structure there that goes parallel to the coast of Aguadilla. You can check that out later, Mel, because you know about the matter. It is rectangular in shape, composed of many smaller rectangles that go all the way down, but it is too much geometrical also to be a natural formation. And that's real big too. So what's going on, we don't know. But the places where there's a lot of UFO and alien activity are places where these type of structures have been found all around the island.
We had the chance to speak yesterday for a long time, and I wish I had recorded some of it. Some of them, of course, you didn't want to make public, and I respect that. But you made a comment to me, and you said, could it be that the real Area 51 is not in Nevada, but is actually Puerto Rico? And something triggered in me, because I remember always going on vacation to Florida and coming back and flying over the island, and I always was impressed with the fact that you see so much technology, you see so much radar and white circles. You know what I'm talking about? These radars on top of mountains, hundreds and hundreds of them. Why do you think that is?
Well, I'm very sure that the U.S. Agencies here in Puerto Rico, defense and military agency and intelligence agency, know very well what's going on here. So they are aware of the presence of this alien species. There seem to be different species here of alien beings, okay, the craft they use, etc. They know the sites they are in or where they come out from or go into, you know, both into the sea and in the ground all over the island. They know the places, okay? So they keep an eye on the whole situation. If not, maybe, who knows, maybe they are involved with the situation themselves. We don't know, but many things that we're going to discuss tonight, Mel, seem to imply that somehow they are involved with part of what's going on here pertaining to the UFO alien situation.
I have a lot of topics that I'm going to be discussing tonight. So forgive me if I start jumping around, but I want to be able to leverage these 2 hours. Let's begin with one topic that is of interest to me. I discussed it briefly during a time about 10 years ago with Timothy Good, someone I know that you know, and it's an aircraft. And let me just find it here. 1980, it was a raw, there's a raw audio clip that I have for those who want to listen to it. You can go to our website and go to the member section. You'll see it there. But a pilot, a young pilot, a Puerto Rican pilot in distress, en route to Puerto Rico from the Dominican Republic, issuing a mayday after encountering an unknown flying object, which continued to keep the aircraft off course. Eventually, communication with the tower ceased and the airplane disappeared with its two occupants over the Bermuda Triangle. You know this case, but you also added more to the story yesterday.
Yes, I investigated that case. As a matter of fact, I was the one who gave the information to Timothy in one of his visits to Puerto Rico.
Yes, I know.
That's the case of José Antonio Pagan Santos and his friend Luis Maldonado Torres from the town of Manatí and Morovis. José Antonio Pagan Santos was the son, or is the son, we'll explain that later, is the son of the former police air division, okay? He was a pilot himself. One night they were in the Dominican Republic, and he was flying a small airplane that his father had, as you know, Lieutenant Pagan from the police. This was their personal airplane, and they were in the Dominican Republic, in Santo Domingo, José Antonio and his friend Luis Maldonado Torres. And they came to Puerto Rico, they returned. And when they were coming back to the island, in the middle between Puerto Rico and the Dominican Republic, somewhere a little above the small Mona Island, that you know, they began reporting, asking, sending maydays, because there was a huge, luminous, strange object that kept, you know, getting in front of them and not allowing them to continue their flight directly to Puerto Rico. And this flight from Spain, Iberia 976, was in the area. They had come out from Santo Domingo also, and could hear the distress signals, you know, and talk to them. This is the Iberia 976, Iberia 976, please tell us what's going on, et cetera, et cetera. And they kept this conversation because in San Juan they couldn't hear it. But the Iberia 976 flight relayed the transmission to an antenna on the top of a Yunque mountain and from there to the FAA in San Juan. And they were able to hear the whole conversation and the May dates, etc. And José Antonio explaining for about an hour about this strange thing, this luminous object that was getting in front of them, preventing them from coming directly to Puerto Rico. And they had to, in order to escape from the object, they had to continually move to the north. And at one moment, they said they were very desperate and said that the object was approaching. A strange metallic sound was heard. And then everything ended. They disappear, okay? We had this source in the FAA in San Juan who gave us a copy of the distress messages, which we made public too. And a search began by the Puerto Rico Air Police Division, the Coast U.S. Coast Guard here in the island, the U.S. Navy, private boats, you know, U.S. Air Force, the Santo Domingo, Dominican Republic, the Navy and Air Force. It was a huge search. Private pilots from Puerto Rico, too, but nothing was ever found, okay? They disappear. But there's this message that says very clearly that something, a strange, mysterious object, was harassing them and they disappeared. So it came out that apparently was a UFO by the description they gave. You know, this huge, strange, bright, lit object, etc. And the case, as you know, is very, very similar. That's the astonishing thing about this, Mel. It's very similar to the case of Frederick Valentich in Australia that happened in 1978. Okay? More or less the same thing happened there, too, with Frederick. But there's an angle here that you know about that we discussed yesterday that is not known by anyone.
Well, you have to tell us. To tell the audience. This is incredible.
Okay. José Antonio and his friend disappeared, okay? By the days that the incident happened, José Antonio's mother, the wife of Lieutenant Pagan, was very ill because she had a condition and she had to be subjected to surgery in her stomach area. I don't know if it was some type of cancer or what condition it was, but it was serious. They had to operate her. And then the disappearance of her son occurred, and she was very, very affected by it emotionally. It was affecting her in her physical condition. And she was always crying and asking what happened to his son, etc., etc., etc. And then several days later, after the search was, you know, called out, stopped, his father, the lieutenant, and her were in their room in the town of Manatee, and they were asking what happened to their son, you know, and asking for God for help, to help their son, whatever had happened, and they wanted to know, etc. And all of a sudden, this was told to us by Lieutenant Pagan, confidentially at that moment, and his wife, the mother of Antonio Pagan Santos. All of a sudden, a flash of light appeared in the room, and a column of light composed with many particles of luminous, I don't know how to say it, Mel, you know, something like out of Star Trek, you know, this column of light,
right,
many sparks, you know, came through the ceiling to the floor of the room, and in the middle of that column of light appeared Jose Antonio. Okay? Jose Antonio was wearing a one-piece suit from his wrist.
Was he physical or was it a hologram?
No, it was physical. According to them, it was totally physical. They couldn't believe it. They were, you know, they were afraid and surprised. And he was wearing this suit and a pair of black boots. And he made gesture to them to stop and told them, don't get any closer. This energy might affect you. It might hurt you. Stay there. And then he began explaining to them not to be sorry for him anymore, not to cry for him anymore, not to suffer for him anymore, because he was okay and he was very happy that he was with these alien beings, okay, down there in what is called the San Juan, San Juan Depth?
Trench?
La Fosa de San Juan Trench.
Right.
That's another name that they have for it, San Juan Trench. That's the deepest part of the Atlantic Ocean, okay? The deepest part in this planet is in the Pacific Ocean, but the deepest part in the Atlantic Ocean is this area north of the island of Puerto Rico. He said that he was down there, and his friend, they were down there doing some work with these beings, whoever they were, and that they were very happy doing what they were doing down there. And so he asked them not to suffer anymore, not to cry anymore for him, because he was okay. And he just wanted them to know that this was the case, you know. Then he sent them a kiss. He made a gesture, sent them a kiss, and got again into this column of light, and everything disappears, okay? This was told to us in confidence at that moment by Lieutenant Pagan and the mother of Jose Antonio Pagan, his wife.
And this is not the wife imagining things because she was sick. This is something that both witnessed.
Both witnessed. They both witnessed this thing happening, you know. And for that reason, they weren't, you know, they didn't suffer anymore. They knew that their son was alive somewhere and was happy. Okay? That's something that never came out at the moment, because at first he asked for confidentiality about it, you know. And we kept it for many years. But, you know, after some years, he said it was okay to reveal it. So I did it.
Have they had any more contact with their son or the friend?
Not that I know of. Not that I know of. They moved to Miami. They're living in Miami, Florida now. But interestingly, Mel, before this all happened, okay, he had a sort of experience with the UFO alien situation. Because about 2 or 3 years before this happened, his disappearance, etc., he, together with his father, Lieutenant Pagan, who was, as I told you, the director of the Air Police Division, they were interested in the UFO matter, you know, in the things that were said, etc. And they liked to go to different places in the island where people said they had seen sightings and encounter beings, etc., and began visiting groups, you know, that talked about this. And one night, they were in their home in Manatee, in the town of Manatee. That's in the north of Puerto Rico, by the middle of the island, in the north of Puerto Rico, in the coastline. And Jose Antonio went to see his small nephew, who was in a playpen in the room of his father at the end of the house, in the back portion of the house. And he was entering the room when he saw something that surprised him. Okay, the baby was in the crib and in this small, in this playpen, and about three, more or less what people describe now as great type beings, you know, were in the crib around him, like shaking him. And when he saw that, he began screaming, "Hey, come here, Papa, Mama, come here, look at this, look what's happening here." And everyone ran, his mother, his father, his sister, to the room, and they were able to see the creatures still in the room that began then running very fast and disappeared through a window. Okay, so they had a sort of glance of the phenomena before all of this happened.
So do you think that this young man was, and his friend were targeted because there was something that they've been following before?
Well, I don't know. But his father told me that Jose Antonio was very shy, very, very shy, a very calm person. And the Jose Antonio that he saw that appeared in his room after he had disappeared in this beam of light was very confident, self-confident, very happy, you know. So he believed that something had happened pertaining to his disappearance and his contact with this being, and wherever he was down there in the San Juan Trench with this being, maybe an alien base or something down there. And as you may know, that there have been several cases in which this has been mentioned, that they have something down there, okay? And that he was very happy and very confident. So what he saw in his son at that moment, he was very, how do you say, como dicen, male,
comforted.
He saw that his son was happy, you know.
Yeah, they were comforted by that. They probably just thought our son is okay. Maybe he has a different mission. But as a parent, when I hear that audio, and folks, again, you can go to the member section and listen to the audio. It's a little bit difficult to understand, but you can feel the tension in the air, no pun intended. But if those were the last words a mother or a father heard of their son, luckily they had that.
Officially speaking.
And then they had this other event that hopefully brought this a little bit of some closure in a way. But let's move on now, unless you have something else to say about this case. I'm thinking of some of the things we discussed yesterday. Everybody, you have heard me talk about my favorite place in the world, and it's the rainforest in Puerto Rico called El Yunque. It's my favorite place. It's just absolutely beautiful. If you saw the movie Avatar, well, that's to me the closest thing you'll ever see. Hikers go there all the time. Now, you know a group of hikers that hiked the place a few years ago. Tell us what happened.
Excuse me?
The hikers that went there, the hikers that went to El Yunque, and all of a sudden, they were surrounded by what seemed to be military personnel, remember?
Oh, yes, that has happened on many occasions in the rainforest, okay? In many, many occasions, okay? The rainforest is a place that is under the control of the U.S. Federal, Forestal...
U.S. Forest Service.
Forest Service and the Department of Agriculture of the United States.
Right.
But it seems to be the case now that apparently, it's also under the control of the U.S. military intelligence agencies. There have been many, many events there in which people that are walking, you know, peacefully in the trails to the different mountains, different sides of the forest, in places that are public, that are not, you know, off limits to anyone, or control of limits to anyone. And all of a sudden, they are surrounded by either people dressed in military camouflage suits, you know, that point their arms, you know, automatic rifles to them and ask them who they are, what are they doing there, that they can be there. And they ask, but we're in the rainforest. This is public place. No, this is not a public place. This is under the control of the U.S. government, and you should not be here, okay? And when they ask, but why is this place, as what all we know is public, what are you doing here? And say, we don't have to answer anything. We make the questions here. In some cases, they have been told, we have been ordered to, if you don't want to leave, to shoot first and ask later. So you decide. And the people don't know. They don't understand what's going on. But they are taken out from the forest, you know, and forced to leave the area. And this has happened in many occasions in different parts of the rainforest, in areas that are totally public. Mount Britton, the El Yunque Peak Mountain, the Pico del Este, there's a little more control because there used to be there some radar system from the U.S. Navy that are no longer there. But that's almost another site, Mel, in which there seems to be some type of facility that may be shared by the U.S. government, military, and intelligence agencies, and some type of aliens. So this is weird. It sounds sometimes like something out of the Dulce base in Mexico.
We've all heard of military facilities in the United States embedded inside mountains. You know, Peter's Mountain in Virginia for intelligence services. What else? Mountain Weather in Virginia for civilian government. Cheyenne Mountain, Colorado for NORAD, North American Air Defense. And, you know, there's even a White House bunker for the president and the key officials. Now, this is where a government will hide in the event of a nuclear war or global disaster.
Okay.
Does El Yunque have a similar facility?
Yes, but in the case of those places, there's no alien presence involved.
Right.
In the rainforest, there's a heavy alien presence involved.
Now, why do you say that?
A lot of flying saucer craft, okay, cylinder-shaped craft, spherical shaped crafts, okay, both luminous and metallic, going into certain areas, certain mountains, coming up from certain mountains, okay, and in some cases, some rare cases, people have been witness to military, U.S. military personnel together with aliens.
Now, let's dissect this. The group of people that went there, some of them were surrounded at one point, and they saw something in addition to the military personnel, right?
Yes, but you saw it. You're talking about a group.
Yes.
And this has been many groups, okay? Many such things have been happening there. There's the maybe you're talking about the case I told you last night.
That yes.
We're talking about this whole thing, you know, in the rainforest. We have this person here in Puerto Rico that is well known. He's a comedian and writer. An artist, Silverio Perez.
His brother, right?
His brother, Carlos Perez, used to be a cameraman from the Channel 11 here in Puerto Rico.
Used to work in that Channel 11 as a child actor in 1979. Maybe I know him.
Maybe you know him, yes. And he used to work there in the news department. Well, the thing is that he was about almost 10 years ago, okay, but the same thing has been happening to other people. But let me tell you this story, okay? Carlos told us he was up there together with some other friends. They wanted to take a friend of them who was visiting the island to see the rainforest by night. So they went up, stopped their car at the end of road 191, where there's a gate there that prevents you from continuing down to the town of Naguabo. And the excuse is that there was a landslide there during a storm back in the 70s. And due to that excuse, they won't open the road to anyone.
For 40 years,
but everyone
right.
knows that's not the real reason, because in many occasions, people have been stopped. They walk down there, you know, seeing the trail and everything. And all of a sudden, the same thing happened. Military men come out, threaten them with their guns, order them to leave the place, etc., etc., with no explanation. But the thing is that Carlos went with his friends stopped their car, left their car there at the entrance of the gate, and went by foot up the small road there to the top of a Junque mountain peak. But before that, there is the Mount Britton peak with an observation tower up there that you know of. And then they entered there, were there for about 10, 15 minutes, seeing the island from up there. You know, it was very cloudy and very, very cold. So they decided to return, to go back down. And they took the trail from Mount Britton down to the area where their car was, you know. When they were going down the trail, a little farther down the trail, they noticed this like a flashlight, a light. And they became, hey, who's there? Who might be there? What's going on? But they continued walking. And all of a sudden, all these guys jumped out from the sides of the small trail, you know, from the woods. And there were many people, military people, soldiers dressed in camouflage suits and with their guns and rifles pointing at them. And they were, you know, terrified. Wait, what's going on? Who are these people? And they seemed to come out from, you know, these camouflage nets that the sharpshooters use to cover themselves and disguise themselves, camouflage themselves with leaves and dirt and many things all over them.
Absolutely, yeah.
They were on the ground, covered by these sort of things, you know, and jumped out and pointed their guns and rifles at them and asked them who they were, why they were there, what were they looking for. And they told them, no, we are just, you know, looking around, we're sightseeing. We have this friend who came to the island and he wanted to see, and we brought him here to see the area by night, and we were leaving. They asked for their IDs, which they gave them, you know, their driving licenses and social security cards, everything. They took note of everything. But then, all of a sudden, a discussion started between the military and Carlos Perez and another guy. And, you know, the thing is that they threatened, and one of the friends of Carlos who was there, who was a detective, told him, hey, Carlos, take it easy because we are not armed, and these people, all of them are armed, and something might happen here, so take it easy. And when he was saying that, they heard a sound, and something rose from the ground to where the soldiers were, from under the net. And when they look with the far side of their eyes, they look at that direction, what they saw, they wouldn't believe it. They saw a small being, about 4 feet tall, as much, slender, gray skin with a very big head. Okay? And then other soldiers who were under the net pulled the creature down, force it to the ground, or force it, whatever, and cover it with the net again, with the camouflage net. And they said, oh, my God, what's happening here? What was that? If these people know that we saw this, we might not get out of here alive, you know. Or something might happen. So keep it quiet. And then they were ordered to leave the place, and they did, you know. But they were followed all the way down the trail and forced to leave the area in their car. And they knew about them because when they were up there, that they stopped them and asked who they were, they told them, you are the ones who came in the white van with these license plates. So they were already checking on them when they arrived to the site down there at the entrance of the trail. So they were sure that there's a lot of security surveillance in the area, and that something very big is going on down there.
Let me ask you this, Jorge. If I didn't know any better, if you have military personnel up there, God knows from what branch of the military they are, but if they have the nets of snipers.
They don't use any IDs.
Right, exactly. Okay? So
you can see up there two types of this military or security personnel. The ones dressed in military camouflage suits, okay, and other personnel that is dressed with a dark dark coveralls with black boots and black caps and glass black lenses. No IDs at all.
Wait a second. We'll talk about another story with a very similar situation there, but this could be private contractors like Wackenhut is known to be serving underground facilities. But if I didn't know any better, these people who are sharpshooters, you know, snipers there, I don't think they're looking for humans. If they're positioned there at night, perhaps with night vision goggles, probably they're looking for something else. What are they looking for?
But then how can you explain why this creature was with them?
Exactly. Could it be
either,
that they just shot
either,
it?
Either, no, it was very alive. It came out by itself, you know, from under the net and stood there, you know, and then the other soldiers pushed it down and covered it again with the net. And it was with them. Either it was captured or they were escorting this creature.
Somewhere.
So we don't know what's going on really on there, up there, okay? That's why I told you yesterday, the Navy, who knows if the real Area 51 is not in Nevada. Because, as you know, because you live here in Puerto Rico, if Puerto Rico ever became the state of the United States, it would be the 51st state, Area 51. So who knows? Maybe the real Area 51 is here in the island, up there in the mountains.
Let me just mention something about what you mentioned, the black overalls. One of our friends of this radio program, Jocelyn, told me a story. We were in Sedona and she was giving me a tour. And she took me to this, I forgot the name of the Forbidden Canyon, I don't remember exactly, or Hidden Canyon. And sometimes you see black helicopters coming out of there, but there are no military facilities there. So you wonder where they're actually entering or exiting. But she said that a few years ago, a professor from a university in California came to do some research and he had the permits to be there. And he was on his own hiking. And apparently these two individuals dressed in black with an insignia of an inverted pyramid, a yellow inverted pyramid, came with automatic weapons and asked him, what are you doing here? And he said, well, I'm a member of academia. I'm coming here with a permit to do some research. No, you're not moving any step further and we're going to have to shoot you. They threatened him. He had to leave. So this is not only happening in Sedona, happening in Puerto Rico. It's happening in many places. Mm-hmm. Now, let's stay with El Yunque for a moment. There's another fascinating story here. 1997, Professor Darby Williams. He was the dean, a college professor, dean at Bowling Green University, who got lost for 12 days in El Yunque. The wife and daughter traveled to the island when he was lost.
Correct.
And federal officials, correct me if I'm wrong, were told him to get out of here, return, no explanation. And then he reappeared 12 days after. Tell us more.
Okay. Professor Darby Williams, he was the dean of the Green...
Bowling Green.
The Bowling Green University in Ohio. He came to Puerto Rico by himself, and he wanted to do some research. We really don't know about what, because there are many stories, three different stories running around of what he was doing, actually, when he came to Puerto Rico. He went to the rainforest. He rented a car, one of these car rentals companies in Isla Verde, and went to the rainforest. He had a video camera with him and went into the lefty car there at the side of the road, Route 191, and went down the La Coca Trail.
The waterfall.
Yes, and he disappeared. Okay, it was known that had happened because his wife and daughter, his family, called the authorities here because 2 days had elapsed and they knew nothing about him, you know. And he said he will be contacting all the time with them. There were stories running around that he came to Puerto Rico to do a research on the so-called coqui. That, you know, is a small toad that we have here in the island of Puerto Rico. A small toad that sings by night. It makes, and there are 49 different species that make this beeping sound that sounds like music to some people. To other people, it's very annoying, you know.
Yeah. loved by many, hated by others.
It's all over the island, you know. Hawaiians hate it because some people in Puerto Rico took
right.
cookies to Hawaii and they spread out and the Hawaiians were going crazy, you know, with the sound of this smell of toast. But the thing is that some people said he was doing a research on that. And other people said that he was doing a research on the political status of Puerto Rico. But what he did was going to the rainforest and heading to the La Coca trail with his video camera and disappear. And his wife and daughter alerted the authorities here and came to the island. A search began, but there was something very strange going on because the authorities of the rainforest said one thing, the police said another thing, et cetera, et cetera. When you see that type of ambiguity, something weird is going on, and believe me, Mel, whenever that happens, somehow it has to do with something very delicate that has to do with political or military or UFO situation in the island. So I became aware of it, and many people in the island too, you know, what was going on with Professor Darby William. And a search started, but I talked to people who work with the Forest Service personnel, biologists and people up there, and they were very annoyed about the whole situation because they were shown as the culprits of the as being inept to do anything to find Professor Williams, okay, Darby Williams. And they were being shown as fools that knew nothing about their work. But the thing is that they weren't allowed to do the real search, okay? The thing is that his disappearance lasted for about 12 days. After 12 days, he appeared at the same site where he had disappeared. And that was very weird. But it was very strange because he allegedly got lost in an area that is very dense, that has a cover of trees that is very dense, hardly any sun goes down to the ground, you know. And he was totally burned by the sun. Another thing is that he only had a pair of shorts on, no other clothing or shoes, whatever. He said he had taken them off and disappeared. He lost them.
Wait a second. Let me stop you there. You said that he didn't have shoes?
No.
Because I tell you this because I mentioned to you yesterday our friend David Politis, the author of Missing 411. I was thinking that this case should be in one of his books. And one of the common denominators of most of the people that get lost is that they do not have shoes. They lose their shoes.
Okay, because if someone take away your shoes in a terrain that is rocky, it will be harder to walk in that terrain.
Right.
So whoever is chasing you can find you very easily. Okay, the thing is that he was without any clothing but a pair of shorts. He had a sunburn, okay? And that was weird because there almost no sunlight because of the dense
Right, what sun? When you said sunburn, I thought, wait a second. This is almost like carpeted. It's like a huge, massive umbrella of forest over you.
That's correct. Another thing is that he said that he survived because he was eating, you know, snails that he found in the forest and fern leaves. As you know, fern are corrosive. You can eat fern.
Isn't that poisonous?
It's poisonous, you know. Maybe it won't kill you, but it will harm you, you know. And he said that he has survived eating that. That's absurd. And he seemed very afraid when he appeared that the media knew and they went to the site where they kept him, they wouldn't let anyone talk to him directly, okay? There was this news woman from the Nuevo Dia newspaper that wanted to do an interview to him and took her small recorder and asked him a couple of questions, and he was taken away by federal agents who were there. He was at all time being held strongly by both arms, by police people. He seemed very afraid and very disturbed, very unsure, and like as if he didn't know what to say exactly.
You said his arms were covered.
They had put on him a, ¿cómo te dice? Una capa.
Right, like a cape. Right.
A cape for rain, you know, over it.
Right, like a raincoat.
But that was it, nothing else. But he was held by both arms by very strong police personnel, women and men, okay? And he wasn't allowed to walk around freely. And he seemed like afraid. And I noticed something, Mel, and I made the remark. Whenever his hands came out from the raincoat, the wrist seemed to show signs of having been handcuffed, strongly handcuffed, and his feet too. To me, it looked like as if it had, you know, grilletes?
Yes.
You know what grilletes are, no?
Yes, of course. It's like a word.
As if he had been chained in his ankles and in his wrists. No one could talk to him, and he was sent back immediately to the United States. Ever since that happened, Mel, I've tried to get in contact with him, and it has been totally impossible. Okay? There's no way you can get in contact with R.W. Williams.
Maybe it's a fetter for those who are wondering. And like you, I have tried twice. I have contacted Bowling Green, mm-hmm. and I have left messages. And they have said to me that, of course, they're aware of his whereabouts. They cannot disclose him to me. They have left messages, but he has never contacted us again.
Yes, it has been to no avail, you know. So who knows what really happened, in my opinion.
Yeah, what's your opinion?
He accidentally stumbled onto something he didn't expect it. Maybe he went down there and he saw something pertaining to the UFO alien situation and the military that is going on down there. And he was captured, you know, for seeing too much. His camera didn't appear. His video camera.
Do you really think, Jorge, that he went there to investigate cookies, or do you think he had an agenda?
No, I don't believe that he had anything to do with the UFOs or anything. But he was checking on something, maybe the fauna and the flora there, you know, but stumbled onto the other things accidentally. And saw something maybe he shouldn't have seen, as has happened to other people there too. Another thing that happened at the beginning of the whole situation was that when it was clear that he had disappeared, as you know, it may, whenever a person disappears, there might be a criminal situation involved. Okay? A crime could have been committed. It would not be the first time. But very strangely, the police authorities, instead of keeping the car that he had rented and the things that were in the car, etc., immediately gave the car to the car rental company and ordered it to be cleaned completely. With that, they are destroying the scene.
Destroying the evidence, right.
Of course, the scene of evidence. If anything had happened, it would disappear. So who knows? I have information, okay, that...
Hold it right there. Hold it right there, because we have to break. We have to break the first segment and put it in segment two. A little bit of a cliffhanger there, I'm afraid. But I know you have an idea of what's happening at El Yunque, not only there but other places in Puerto Rico. And as I told you before, I strongly believe that the island of Puerto Rico is a laboratory. It's been a laboratory for decades, probably from a few years after the United States took it over in 1898 after the Spanish-American War. But I want to get into this after we come back. How can people learn more about your work? Buy your magazine if they speak. Do you have it in English or just in Spanish?
Not yet, just in Spanish.
You should have somebody translate it, because I've seen some of them and it's great information. How can people buy the magazine, subscribe to it, or learn more about your work, Jorge?
Learn about my work. You know, they can enter my page in
Facebook.
Okay. Jorge Martin Miranda is the name of the page. Jorge Martin Miranda. And there's a lot of information there. You know, many of the things that happen in Puerto Rico.
And also you have a blog that you haven't updated quite a while, but you have a lot of good cases there. I have both folks listed on our website too. We're here with Jorge Martin. A lot of information to discuss. It's a pleasure to me, after 30 or more years of wanting to interview Jorge, ever since I worked at the same company you used to work for many, many years ago, we're finally converging here. Folks, don't go anywhere. Mel Fabregas here. Much more when we return. This is Veritas. We'll be right back.
Thank you for listening to the first part of this very important Veritas interview. To listen to the rest and all of our material, proceed to the members section or subscribe at veritasradio.com. Don't forget to visit the Veritas store for MMS, hemp oil, pure organic sulfur, and other great products. Thank you.